Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Daebak Podcast, where we do a deep dive into the classic Korean dramas that have won over generations of fans across decades and around the world. Today, we're doing a mini dive on the just-aired drama Love in Contract. I'm one of your hosts, Alisa, also known as the Bollywood Newbie on Twitter, and I'm joined by Melanie of Pardesi Reviews on YouTube.
Hello.
Catherine of TotallyFilmy.com.
Hi, everyone.
And our very close friend of the podcast, RK, who goes by @ROH_tweets on Twitter, at least for the time being. and our fourth podcast partner, Vicky, is not participating today because she dropped this drama, which is actually very indicative of the mixed reactions people had to the story. So we're going to get into that in a minute. Before we begin, though, I just want to say that Twitter is, as you probably know, in a very unstable situation right now. We're still on Twitter as long as it stays up. Literally, I'm gonna stay until the day I can't log in. But we are, you know, migrating to some other platforms as well. And I particularly want to give a shout out to Mad, who is a moderator on the Asian Dramas Discord, because she reached out to me and offered to create a new channel just for our podcast, which was an incredibly gracious thing to do. And a group of us are already there and chatting, and it's a really lovely group of people. So please join us. And I'm going to drop a link to the Discord and to all the other places we inhabit online so that you can continue to follow us no matter where we land. So now I'd like to do a quick intro to Love in Contract. Love in Contract tells the story of Sang Eun, a woman who runs a business as a wife for hire. She presents a seemingly perfect facade, but behind the scenes, she's an emotional wreck due to her childhood being groomed to become the perfect chaebol wife. Her longest lasting client, Ji-ho, is legally married to Sang-eun and has been using her services every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the past 5 years. Sang-eun knows virtually nothing about Ji-ho except that he cooks for her and makes no demands. Despite that, she's begun to develop feelings for him. But when she has an unexpected encounter with Hye-jin, a wealthy and famous actor with whom she has a past connection, he hires her to be in a contract relationship with him on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and things inevitably get complicated. This drama opened to fairly strong ratings in Korea, but it had a big drop after the first two episodes and never recovered. Yet it was the number one series on Prime Video, where it aired in Asia, and also on Viki for viewers outside of Asia. And I think there's a lot to talk about in terms of the reactions to this drama, which we'll get into. The drama stars Park Min-young, or actually Park Min-young. I found out that's actually how you pronounce her name, and I was in shock when I found out. I was like, what? But yes, it's Park Min-young as Sang-eun, the single life helper. Ko Kyung-pyo as Ji-ho, Sang-eun's severely introverted and socially awkward contract husband. Kim Jae-yong as Hye-jin, the incredibly handsome, wealthy, and famous actor who contracts with Sang-eun to pretend to be his fiancé. Kang Hyung-suk as Gwang-nam, Sang-eun's openly gay ex-husband, roommate, and best friend. And Jin Kyung as Madam Yu, the mysterious woman who raised Sang-eun to be the perfect chaebol wife. And unlike most of our deep dives, we're going to start out with a non-spoiler discussion since this drama just finished airing, and we will give you a heads up when we start discussing spoilers. So this show was marketed as a typical Park Min-young rom-com with a love triangle between the male leads, something along the lines of What's Wrong with Secretary Kim and her private life. But then the first episode dropped and it turned out to be much different than people expected. How would you guys describe that first episode?
I mean, I think also the fact that the opening credits sequence is this animated, cutesy thing. I mean, it has clues to the drama, the things that you see in the opening episode, like her famous drawer full of wedding rings. But it lulls you into this, oh, this is going to be a cutesy, light, fluffy rom-com. And then, I mean, I remember my impressions of the first episode. The Ji-ho character is so kind of off-putting and gives us such a weird vibe in the opening couple episodes. You're almost like, is this guy a serial killer? Like you're really not sure about him because he's so quiet and so socially weird that he gives off this really weird vibe. Now, by the end, he's a complete cinnamon roll and we love him and we adore him.
Yes.
Those opening episodes, we're not sure. And that's part of the whole thing is that the writers and the directors, at least the way they opened this drama series, is kind of playing with the audience's expectations of what does it mean when I watch a Park Min Young drama? Like, what am I looking for? What am I expecting? Like fluffy rom-com land. And what, I'm like, it's like Dorothy, I'm not in Kansas anymore. Like, what?
RK, what did you think of that first episode? Well, you
So
had expectations though, right? Because you had been hearing us talk about it, right?
right. And no, I had actually watched it at the same time that you guys had.
Oh,
I just
okay.
wasn't like maybe as excited about it as you and Melanie were. But I love this trope, the fake dating trope, fake marriage, fake
Oh, love it.
whatever.
I love
And
it.
so I was into it from the get-go, but I think my expectations were subverted by like two things. First, this wasn't the traditional fake dating setup in the sense that there was no meet cute followed by some sort of emergency that required the two characters to fake date. And in fact, I think part of the weirdness of this drama is that you go into it with the expectations of that first episode setup, and instead the show starts out in like episode six. Right? So
Right.
there's this sense
Yes.
of, oh, there's all this backstory I don't know, and it hasn't been revealed to me. And if you go in with a particular expectation of what the drama should be like, I think this can be quite off-putting. I think that's why a lot of people just weren't into it after the first couple of episodes. Not only was it not fluffy and typical rom-com, but also it was a bit hard to follow. Like Melanie said about the serial killer thing. On my Twitter timeline, there were all these people speculating about what it was Jiho did for a living because he himself describes it as, oh, I do something unseemly and people don't like me for it. And I was like, serial killer, mortician, right? What does he do? And it turns out to be none of those things and really something much more innocuous. But yeah, there's a lot of speculation about that.
When I saw the first episode, what I tweeted was watched Love and Contract episode one, and I think that's the weirdest first episode of a drama I've ever seen. Sort of funny, but also really heavy and sad in a lot of ways. The relationship with Madame Yu, all of the rings in the drawer, the 5 years of silent dinners. I think that's what I was I like everybody else. I thought it would be like, her private life or what's wrong with Secretary Kim or something like that. And then it's, I was like, whoa, this is actually really sad. Like you have, I don't want to get into it, but there's a converse, we'll get into it in the spoiler section, but there's a conversation with her roommate in that first episode that is like, wow, a punch in the gut, like legitimately tragic. And that's like 15 minutes into the first episode. And there's this really dark and sad conversation between Madame Yu and Sung-eun. And there's funny moments too, though. Like you have
Oh,
this
yeah.
this peppy montage with all the weddings that she's been in, and it's played for laughs with like peppy music. But then it segues directly into this really dark and sad scene. So it was like, I was like really taken aback, but in a good way. Like my reaction was like, wow, I like this. This is really strange. Like I want to know what's going to happen with this. That wasn't what I was expecting, but I'm into it. But Catherine, as our resident curmudgeon on this one, I want to hear what was your impression of that first episode?
Actually, let me go back before the first episode because I had no intention of watching this at all. Park Min Young is not my wheelhouse. I don't care for her. I don't like the drama she's been in. And I, that's me. Anyone who loves her and expects heard of fluffy rom-coms and loves them, that's great. But that's not me. And everything I saw in the promos leading up to this led me to think, okay, this is going to be another one of those. I'm not interested. And then you, Elisa, started talking about how strange that first couple of episodes were. And I thought, okay, let's give it a try. And it was. I don't think it engaged me as much as it did you and Melanie, for sure. But it definitely was not as advertised on the tin.
And that's why we wanted to talk about it. And actually, I had wanted to talk about it, but I kept it to myself because I thought, well, nobody else is as into this as I am. And I didn't want to drag anybody else in. But then Melanie suggested it first, that we do a podcast on it, which I was really happy about. But it actually surprised me that you were the one who made that suggestion.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a little while since we've done a podcast. And I kept thinking, like, what could we latch onto? And then, you know, F4 Thailand was another, kind of currently not a classic episode that we did. I mean, based on an adaptation of a classic. Okay, I will give you that. But I was just like, this one is one of those dramas that really engaged Elisa and I, that there were intense Twitter conversations about, as RK mentioned, there was all this speculation in the first couple of episodes. What the heck does Jiho do for a living? Like, you know what I mean? And the writers and the drama production team were feeding into that, of like making it this big mystery. And I'm like, oh my God, what is that? And then when we finally find out, we're like, oh,
it's not that big a deal, but
right. But it just I also enjoy being surprised. I enjoy I have this expectation and you went a different way and I don't know where this is going. And then there's this dark, strange flashback of a dinner party where somebody rips a necklace of pearls off. Like, what? we carried that mystery. Like, what happened? That super dark flashback. And that was something that carried through, that there was this undercurrent of darkness, of trauma, of wanting to know what made these characters the way that we're seeing them today. And it's like RK said, we felt like we were dropped in the middle of a drama, but we don't know all the backstory. And that was part of the journey of the drama, is learning the backstory little bit by little bit on all three main characters. Not just, most of the time it's just one main character that we're focusing in on a backstory. This one, it was the entire quote unquote love triangle, all three of them that had an interesting backstory, an interesting darkness to their character.
Yeah. And before we dive in more on that, I just wanted to read a sampling of some of the reactions online, because they were really funny, even when I didn't agree with them, because people were pissed, like pissed, not like, oh, it was okay, I didn't really like it, but like actively angry about it. And that interested me a lot, that people were actively angry about it.
And I get that reaction, because I could see people were the same as me with the expectations of what they were going to get from this drama. And if that's what they wanted, of course they were going to be angry with what we were given.
I think it's more than that, though. I think it's more than that. Reacting to something in the drama itself, you know. I'll get into it more in the spoiler section. But I think, you know, it was like, yes, they had an expectation going in. It was going to be this kind of drama, and it wasn't. But also there's something about the drama itself that pings people. I mean, I saw two separate human beings, both say that the drama gave them cancer, which is pretty intense reaction. And the Soul Sisters podcast described it as the worst first episode of a drama they'd ever watched. I mean, that's an intense reaction. The worst first episode. I was really like, wow, okay. And then Vicky, our podcast partner, said, I agree. I definitely wasn't expecting the other elements of the plot. I thought it was just going to be a rom-com full of tropes and fun. And then somebody else said, this is not the rom-com I was expecting. Been a lot of bait and switch rom-com K-dramas. And that's Joanna on Twitter. And then Seb's K-drama said episode one had an oppressive feel all through, as you could feel the pain of the characters. Our two leads have a beautiful soft charm with thorns. Interesting to see how they find their happiness. So she was one of the people who liked it, but that oppressive feeling was definitely there, regardless if you liked it or not. And then there were people who thought Ko Kyung-pyo was too ugly to be the male lead, especially compared to the other actor who, forgive me, I don't even remember his name. Kim Jae-young. Sorry about that, Kim Jae-young. I'll remember you. But a lot of people were like, because Kim Jae-young is gorgeous, right? Like a very typically handsome K-drama lead, you would think. And so people are like, why would she want to be with that boring, ugly guy? You know, it was like really some mean stuff online.
I wouldn't have gone that far, but you do know that I don't care for him as an actor and I don't find him very appealing at all. But that's, you know, that's another reason why I wasn't terribly interested in the drama at first. But, you know,
yeah,
I don't think I'd be as hardcore as some people were.
It was interesting because before this drama, I had always thought, I always liked him, but I didn't love him. Like, I always thought he was solid. Like, he's going to show up, do a good job. He's not going to put in a bad performance, but he's not necessarily going to wow you either, right? He's not going to blow you away. But however, I loved him in this drama. Oh my God.
Me too. I mean, when Reply 1988, I think, is the only full drama that I've seen him in. And there, he's literally the boy next door. And it's such a different kind of role. This is like the first adult thing that I guess I'm seeing him in, right? And I just felt like he hit it out of the park. Like he was so great at both showing darkness, showing that mysteriousness at first, and then his comic reactions to certain absolutely ridiculous scenes were gold. They were just gold. You know? Yeah. And we loved like somebody put together an edit of just kind of a whole string of these comedic shocked reactions and stunned reactions that he had to different things. And I mean, he was just amazing. So I learned after this that he used to be on the Korean Saturday Night Live. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, like I hadn't really seen that kind of comedic talent that he has, and he really does, and he really got to show a range in this, and I was very impressed.
I it's funny though, because when we both said that we loved him, Catherine and RK were like shaking their heads vigorously no, which is, again, this drama was polarizing is what I would describe it as. And this is, we are a microcosm of the reactions. And I want to weigh in on what I thought of his performance, but I would like to hear from Catherine and RK first.
Well, you know, as I've said, he's not my cup of tea, and I don't think he ever is going to be. So I don't think I can judge him very fairly. I think the only thing I've ever liked him in is Reply 1988, and that's an extended cast of which he's a little part, a smaller part. Everything else I've seen him in, Chicago Typewriter, the one with the weather girl.
Jealousy Incarnate.
Jealousy Incarnate, thank you. He was the second lead in that.
Yeah,
I didn't care for him. I was really glad he was the second lead and he wasn't going to get the girl. So I cannot be objective about his performance or anything at all because it just doesn't appeal to me.
Okay, go ahead.
So like Catherine, I really liked him in Reply 1988. Maybe that's saying too much about what Catherine said. I liked him in Reply 1988, but partly because I liked that character. Like, I was really into Song Sanu more than I was into the other two sort of lead characters, the lead male characters in that drama. But I've seen him in a few other things. And the impression I always came away with was he's okay, but I didn't rate him either as an actor or as the characters he was playing. In Flower Boy Next Door, for example, he's an extremely annoying kind of jerk, really. And so he doesn't stand out in that sense. And I've never really enjoyed watching him work. I don't think this changed my mind about the actor, but I do like the character of Jiho because I think he's interesting in the sense that everything is not right there on the page. Like, you have to work hard to ferret out what's happening behind the scenes. And I enjoyed that about him. But there's also sort of a steady stability to him that I think that character needed. And I think he did fine as an actor. It just wasn't, to me, something that like jumped off the page at me and made me more interested in the drama.
And for me, it was. And the thing I was really impressed with him is it's a complex character because he's painfully introverted. Like, if you thought Imin-gi was introverted in Because This Is My First Life, this is like a next level, like even more to the point, like I think the whole purpose of the serial killer thing was to make you kind of convey that he's so shut down that he comes across as creepy, like he's just completely walled off from the world. And he has to, first of all, be sympathetic. Second of all, make you believe that Sang-eun could fall in love with him. And third of all, you know, there's a lot of comedy in this show where you're laughing at him, you know, and he's really funny in the comedy bits, in my opinion. I was literally laughing out loud through a lot of those scenes. And yet he has to be able to go from where you're actively laughing at how ridiculous he is and turn it around and start breaking your heart or get you swooning when he starts to romance the female lead in a real way. And so it's hard to pull that off. I mean, I thought it was a great performance. I was really impressed. And yeah, he definitely won me over. I don't think there's many people who could have played it. Yeah. Maybe Imin-gi would be the other person. A lot of people did say that he would have been good in the role. And I'm like, yeah, except that he's done this role like twice before already. So it wouldn't, you know, why do it a third time? But yeah, I just loved him in it. I thought he was amazing.
To be honest, the whole is he a serial killer thing actually made me really sad, because I remember when I got divorced after my first marriage, I literally shut down like that. And I had a really hard time interacting with people and communicating with people. And that actually made me really sad that people would think that badly of him just because he was going through something or, you know, didn't know how to handle a lot of this. So I will say that the transition from that until he learns how to manage more, to be around people again, how you relearn those things, or just learn in his case, that really did connect with me.
I love that journey. And
yes.
And I think that it's supposed to be seen as kind of cruel, you know, how people react to him. I don't think the drama frames it like you should, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's supposed to be a kind of tragic, even from the first, because I rewatched the first two episodes right before this, just for the prepare for the podcast. And I was like, oh yeah, wow, holy shit, this is really sad. And he's sad, you know, like he actually, even when you're not really sure where who he is, you're still, he still has a core of sympathy. It's something about him that makes you engaged in what's going on with him.
Especially when you see him with the workers in his office. And
yeah,
that's one of my favorite things about the drama, is how that relationship changes over time. And Sang-eun's character is part of facilitating that. But it's also that he just slowly opens up, not just to her. It's not just, you know, I'm opening up only within this romantic relationship, but in every part of his life. And that's really, it's really great to see. Like, he didn't realize that human connection was there all along. He just had to kind of reach out a little bit. And I just love that. And I just wanted to say, I am a Park Min-young fan, and What's Wrong with Secretary Kim was one of my very first K-dramas that I ever watched. And I absolutely loved her performance. Now, she just did Love Forecasting Weather, whatever that one was. You
know, Forecasting
Love and Weather. Okay, which I will admit, again, that was something where we were kind of sold, oh, it's going to be this zany office romance. And it wasn't quite all of that. So I do admire her for saying, okay, this is my image. I've done Her Private Life. Again, one of my favorite K-dramas. I've done this. And now it seems like this year with both of these dramas, it's like, okay, this is my image. And now I'm going to subvert it a little bit. Now I'm going to go a little bit deeper. Now I'm going to, you know, show characters with real trauma. And so I admire her for that, for stretching and doing something. I mean, because I imagine, like, as she looks at this script, it's not her responsibility to have created this whole marketing and the, you know, opening credit sequence and how they were kind of fooling the audience. It's not the way she set it up. And I, you know, I admire her, you know, doing that. And there was some other things about this drama that really from the get-go appealed to me. And that we haven't mentioned, well, you just mentioned the actor, but her ex-husband, roommate, best friend, Gwang Nam, is one of my favorite characters, like from this whole year, like of any drama.
Yeah.
I love him. So this actor, Kang Kyung-suk, was a very shy police officer in hometown Homcha, and he was adorable in that, not a gay character in that. And then when we see in these opening episodes that he is a gay character, like I saw this Twitter outpouring, like, he better get a happy ending, he better get a relationship, or we're gonna riot. You know, like,
I did go on.
But wait, I just want to remember everybody, we're doing non-spoilers right now. Okay, so sorry.
I will spoil things
non-spoilers
later.
But we can spoil in a minute, because I want to move on, but go ahead.
Let me just tag on to what Melanie was saying, is that even though I'm not a Park Min-young fan at all, I do agree that for someone like her, it would have been just so easy to stay in that lane and keep going and be successful. So yes, I do agree that you have to admire her for wanting to branch out.
And from what I read, she had the script for a year before she did the show. So they waited a year until her schedule was open, and she wanted to do it that badly. So, and I also think, you know, Ko Kyung-pyo goes for more quirky projects, generally speaking, and not like mainstream stuff. And the fact that he chose to be the lead in this, I think is very indicative of the script being unusual. So yeah, you know, and kudos to everybody, you know, who jumped on this weird ass script. But before we move into the spoiler section, I would ask, why did we keep watching this show when so many people dropped after those first episodes? I mean, I loved it, so that's why I kept watching it.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And it was something that, it was one of those dramas, and that's been, I realized that it's a rarity when you really are hooked with something and you can't wait for the next episode to drop, and you have to like watch it in the middle of the day when it drops, you know, like that. And
that was my fault.
Well, it's partially because, yeah, Lisa would start tweeting about it. Like, oh my God, am I going to have spoilers if I don't watch it? But it, you know, Law Cafe was that way, especially in the beginning episodes. But it's been, I'm realizing that kind of feeling is not every drama, right? And so when I have that feeling, I want to ride that ride. I want to just, you know, ride the wave of it and experience it and love it. And though, even though everyone on Twitter didn't like it, the people that did were passionate about it. And again, it was fun to be part of a community that was speculating and commenting on every episode as they dropped. And so just the whole fan experience of it was fun.
And for me, it was very much, there were Gwang Nam and Madam Yu, I loved as characters. So that was the thing that kind of kept me going. But also your reaction, Elisa, and Melanie's reaction was so opposite to mine that I kind of wanted to keep going, because I was like, let me see what they see here. And I don't think I ever did.
No, honestly, it's okay.
But and then, you know, Elisa was trying to gently nudge me to drop. But at that point, I was like, you know, 12 episodes in, and I thought, let's see this to the bitter end.
Yeah. I think for me, it was, I was never that enthusiastic about the drama, but the thing that kept me watching is I think the writing is actually really good. Mm-hmm. There are some major plot holes, and I'm not a big fan of the basic premise of the show, but I did really enjoy seeing what was going to happen next. And so the thing that drove me was I just needed to know what happened next. I knew that the leads were going to get together, but I didn't know how. I didn't know mm-hmm. in what way they would be changed by the experience. I didn't know what was going to happen to the Hae-jin character, for example. So, because I think even at the very beginning, it was clear that the love triangle wasn't going to go the way most love triangles usually do. So I was curious about all that. I wanted to know what happened to Madame Yu. I wanted to know where Gwangnam would end up, all of those things. So that's what kept me driven. I did not engage in the Twitter discussion of this as much because I was like a whole day behind everybody else and I didn't want to get spoiled. So I actually ended up muting the hashtag and not following the discussions for that reason. But yeah, I do think it was well written, and that and the general weirdness will keep me watching a drama for a long time, even after other people drop it. So
yeah. And I just want to be like, to be specific and piggyback on what you guys have said. The writing was very interesting. The drama opens at a point where in a normal drama, like you said, RK, would be like episode 6, only it's episode 1. And tonally, it's all over the place. And also there's a lot of genre subversions, which we'll get into in the spoiler section. But I think the writers were very deliberately messing with our expectations of rom-coms and and leads, and our romantic fantasies to a certain extent were almost under indictment by this drama, which I actually really enjoy, but I think pissed off a lot of people.
Well, you know, now that you say that, then it makes sense why I didn't connect with it as much, because I don't connect with those things in a drama. Like that's, I mean, you know, historicals are my wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
So it becomes obvious to me now that I was never going to be as fully engaged precisely because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was definitely undermining, subverting, deconstructing the genre on purpose. And also the other part of it that I was really taken with was the depiction of trauma, because I'm convinced that the writer really did research on how trauma manifests in adults, because it's very real. It's very much, you know, in a fantastical plot that is not real, which is kind of absurd, but the depictions of how these people are kind of limping through life is on target and painful. I mean, there are scenes where I was wincing through them. I was just like, ow, that's so awful, you know? And yeah, I had tremendous sympathy for everyone, including Madame Yu, who is, you know, kind of an ambiguous figure. Yeah. So like, before we go into the spoiler section, if you've listened this far and you haven't watched the drama, I would say, first of all, give it a shot, because I think you just have to see it for yourself to decide whether or not you'll know by the end of episode 2, whether you want to continue. If by the end of episode 2, you're not into it, that, you know, it's just not your thing. But I think, you know, if the idea of like, something weird, something quirky, something unexpected, and kind of heavy at the same time, emotionally heavy, appeals to you, then, you know, this is probably going to be the drama for you. Yeah. So now we can spoil the hell out of this show, and we should. So, and I guess we can start from episode 1 again, because it was so strange. And just a brief plot synopsis. So when we open, Sang-eun has had a 13-year career, being a wife for hire, and men hire her, and she's had multiple wedding ceremonies, and she's had 12 or 13 legal marriages and divorces. And the men hire her for a variety of reasons. So for example, her roommate, Gwangnam, is a man, a former client who hired her because he's gay and he wanted to, you know, placate his family. And you see him dealing with homophobia in a very painful way. There's a scene where he tells Sang-eun that his niece in middle school has a girlfriend, and his sister is blaming him for making her gay. Ouch. And that's in like the first 15 minutes of episode 1. And, yeah. And then there's this, you know, she says there's this really weird montage of all her weddings, and it's played for laughs, and it's very light poppy music. And then that directly segues into her making a final payment to Madame Yu, because she's been sending money to Madame Yu for 13 years to pay her off for something we learn, you know, later on in the show. And that scene is really, really heavy and sad and dark. You know,
And there's so many layers to it, and that's part of what drew me in. Like, what is the history here? What the heck, right?
Yeah, you know? What's going on between these two people? And then, you know, and she's been married to Jiho for 5 years and been seeing him 3 days a week for 5 years. And she's already falling in love with him when the story opens. She's already caught feelings for him. And the reason why is because all he wants from her is to feed her and spend time with her. And he doesn't make any demands. And so it's like this safe space, like a respite, a place she can go to and feel cared for.
She doesn't have to be on in the same way that she is with all her other clients. I mean, for example, we'll see one example where someone has hired her to be his wife at a high school reunion, a college or high school reunion, whatever. Basically, you know, some nerdy guy, like, look at this way. So the entire evening, she has to be completely on and show how brilliant she is and how she can speak English and how she went to, you know, like, she has to show off and be on for that entire evening. And then contrast with her quiet evenings at home having dinner, and you could just see, you know, she can, I don't even want to say that she can be herself, but to just that she doesn't have to be on in the same way in her Monday, Wednesday, Friday with Jiho. And here's someone who is serving her, who delights in making dinner for her. Whereas in other circumstances, she's having to show that she has the skills of a professional chef or whatever. And here, that's, you know, it's, he just wants to give to her and just sit quietly. And it's just so restful and peaceful for her compared to all the other roles that she's had to play.
But it's also played for laughs a little bit, because mm-hmm. the irony mm-hmm. is she has no idea how to clean up. And that's a thread that goes through the drama. And near the end, Madame Yu does say something like, I should teach you how to do this.
And she learns it.
And she does.
And that's like an example of, RK, the kind of writing you're talking about, because it's a metaphor. Like, Sang-eun in those early episodes presents this beautiful facade, and she's a very accomplished person, and she can play act the perfect wife. But behind the scenes, everything's shoved into the closet. It's a total wreck. You know, Gwang-nam cleans up after her because she literally can't clean up after herself. At the end of the drama, though, she literally learns how to do the recycling. She learns how to clean and fold towels. Like, she's making and it's like she's literally growing up.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting because, to me, her inability to look after herself, to clean up after herself, is a sign that she's not very good at self-care. Like, she's dedicated her career to essentially helping others. That's what she calls herself. She's a single life helper, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She helps other people manage their lives, and she's very good at presenting a particular front. She's very beautiful, she's sophisticated, she has good taste, she makes a good impression, but behind it all, she's not very good at taking care of herself at all. And I think that manifests itself in her inability to do things like recycle properly or to clean up after she's made a huge mess in the kitchen. All of that. But there's so much growth in that character that by the end, she's mm-hmm. like, okay, I can do this, I can be myself. And I do think it's interesting that the Jiho character puts no expectations on her, but their relationship really only starts to take off after she's forced to meet some of the people he knows outside of the space of their dinner meetings, right? They run into his boss at the theater. She has to throw a homecoming party or whatever, so a housewarming party. And I think because of that, their relationship begins to grow, because suddenly, while he's not actively putting expectations on her, she can go back into her role-playing mode, basically, while also entertaining her very real feelings for this person.
I mean, after Jiho has been lulled into, we have 5 years of this relationship, and when she announced, you know, I think he sees a plane ticket or something, and that was his clue that their time was possibly coming to an end. And then it's like he's grasping at, I need you to come to this work event. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of grasping at something to keep that connection with her. He doesn't want to lose it. And, you know, like RK said, that's what spurs even more growth in their relationship, of having to be out of this little bubble in his apartment. The other thing is, I think it was a Reddit comment that you read, Alyssa, you sent to me, someone talking about how the characters show that they didn't have attachment as children, and how that manifests you know, I don't know if you have that.
It's from Instagram, and I do have it here somewhere if I can find it. But before I read that comment, because it's really great, I want to talk about, continue this. So the genre subversion aspect of it, somebody said, I think of Love in Contract as a deconstructed rom-com. In the typical rom-com, marriage is ultra important and divorce is some hand-wringing crisis. In this drama, Sang-eun's multiple marriages and divorces are just paperwork to her, and the OTP are already married to each other. As a result, their relationship is distilled into pure feelings, and that is the sole basis of evaluation. It is eschewing the institution of marriage, but celebrating love. And I think that is a really great summary of what the show was trying to do.
It's interesting. This director has a long career. He recently did My Roommate is a Gummy Ho. He did 100 Days My Prince. But the screenwriter, this is, and I'm sorry, I don't know if it's a man or a woman. This is their very first drama. So the writer is Ha Goo Dam. And I find that interesting. And it happened to be that at the same time I was watching this, I was watching, because this is my first life, and I was thinking about the female lead in that drama. It's a very kind of similar drama. You know, RK is laughing because it's a similar kind of contract marriage kind of a plot. But the female lead in that is a writer of dramas, and she wants to do something different when she, and then the people that she's working with want to pigeonhole her back in the same old tropey kind of makjung dramas, and she wants to do something a little bit different. And so that's what made me, you know, that's one of the things, is this is a fresh new writer, as you said, as you're saying, kind of deconstructing, you know, and playing with our expectations as an audience. Now, we can argue whether, because these are written on the fly as they're filming, whether they had this great idea and did it really carry through all the way to the end of the drama. I don't know if they completely stuck the landing, which is I'm learning is a very rare thing in drama writing. But, and sometimes I felt like the last episodes was like all those tropes that we've been deconstructing and rejecting, all of a sudden here they all are by the truck full.
Served straight, which was the problem. I really wonder if network interference came into play.
I wonder too.
Because there's a lot of things in there that were set up and didn't play out, particularly with Gwangnam.
Yeah.
Because he was really set up to have a romance and it never happened. And so I really wonder, and especially because the ratings did drop dramatically after the early episode. And so at least in Korea, though, the show was popular with the international audience. So I think there was definitely a sense of, oh my God, you know, this is flopping.
Right.
Which is unfortunate. But going back into this genre subversion, so like Park Min Young's character, you know, is really a victim of human trafficking when you think about it, because the plot is that she's been adopted by a Chaebol family to facilitate a business merger, and that's why she's been raised by Madame Yu. And then, yes, we learned stuff about her down the road, but that's the initial setup. And so she grows up with this weird ersatz mother figure, who turns out to be, we're in the spoiler section, turns out to be her real mother. But, you know, initially she doesn't know that growing up, and she's been told by her, "Don't call me Oma, don't call me mother." So, you know, it's a really, and there's a scene where she gets drunk with the two male leads, and she starts talking and about how, you know, she only gets rewarded when she's performing, and that nobody has ever loved her. Like she's only, and people just, only want to use her.
Yeah.
It's sad. Oh my God. And I'm like, wow. And so like, this is not a typical candy character. This is not a spunky, like, you know, this is somebody who literally has been really like used and damaged in a very fundamental way. And that's heavy, you know, that's not what you typically would see, obviously, in a rom-com heroine. I think another genre subversion is the two leads, two male leads, and how they're contrasted with each other, because Haejin is the second male lead. He's rich, he's famous, he's gorgeous, and he's smitten with the female lead. And he takes her on these really expensive, over-the-top dates. They go horseback riding on the beach. They go on a sailboat. He has this food truck set up for her, you know, on the beach, campfire, you know, wherever. Yeah. And, you know, and he's from a Chebol family. So he is the person, and the reason I found that I never personally had a struggle with who was the male lead, but people really struggled with it. And I saw comments more than once for people saying, the second male lead is more like the male lead. And I finally said, well, why are you saying that? And they were like, because of the things he does, the way he behaves, the way he looks is what we would expect the male lead to be like. And Jiho doesn't have any of that. And I thought, huh, that's really interesting. To the extent that I even wondered, not that I actually find Ko Kyung-pyo attractive, but he's not conventionally handsome by Korean standards. And he's way less handsome objectively than the guy who played Hye-jin, but he's the lead, you know, and a lot of people have trouble with that. And right. They would be like, why does she want to be with that quiet weirdo? Why does she want to be with this guy, boring ass guy? All they do is have dinner together every night. You go.
I think K-drama too primes you to think that people who know each other from their childhood or have met before are fated to be together. And therefore, right. They have the shared backstory and similar kind of family related trauma that these two people need to be together. And the Jiho character is the interloper, but really here from the very beginning, she's already made her choice. So Hye-jin exists primarily for his own sake. Like, she helps him figure out things that he needs to do with his life, whereas she doesn't really have that much of an impact. He does not have that much of an impact on her. Her decisions have already been made, and whatever growth she shows comes from her relationship with Jiho and the repair of her relationship with Madame Yu, rather than from Hye-jin himself. And I thought it was interesting that where her trauma is related to not being loved by anyone, his trauma is related to the fact that so many people love him in a sort of artificial and superficial way, but even his family doesn't really love him in the way that he wants. So
he has to be the parent of his mom.
Well, his mother is an alcoholic. Right. Canonically, like, she goes to alcohol treatment. And he spent his childhood cleaning her up. And he himself has a substance abuse problem, because there's a scene where he drinks and takes pills. And then his manager says, oh, I thought you weren't doing that anymore. And so it's really interesting, because in some ways he's this stereotypical male lead in his behavior. And you're right, there's a childhood connection between them, or at least when they were younger. But he's kind of a wreck. And I never got the feeling he loved Sung-eun, really. It was more like she was a life preserver. Like, he was drowning when she showed up. He's so lonely that he's laying in one room while the cat who hates him is in another room. And there's a hysterically funny line where he says, let's just like keep, you know, say hello to each other every once in a while, so if we die, the other one will know that we're dead.
It's interesting that you say that he looks on her as a life preserver, because I think a lot of people were very angry at that moment where he sort of grabbed her and said to everybody, this is my fiance, we're getting married. But that moment makes sense in that context, because he's drowning. He needs help in this moment. And he does, you know, kind of the knee jerk reaction first thing, and grabs her and says, this is it. We're doing this.
Right. So,
that again is like a typical male lead in this kind of a fake marriage setup. RK is nodding, because it's always like this crisis situation. And then the girl looks up like, what? You know, what's exactly what played out here. So he's doing all the kinds of things. It's not just, that's one example. And the dates is another thing. But also there's a non-consensual kiss. She's drunk. It's the whole campfire thing, whatever. Strangely, the male lead is lying passed out on the next to them when he goes in for the kiss, and he doesn't ask first. And they're playing with us. Typically, we'd be like, wow, that's so sexy, that's so romantic. And here we're like, oh, this is wrong, right? Like, this
what is the wrong. Hell, dude?
Yeah.
And exactly. And, you know, the risk grabbing you know, that the second male lead does with her and drags her around. There's no risk. I don't think there's any risk grabbing, or at least not in the same way with Jiho. There's one risk grab. It's like in a, it's not the same thing. It's not dragging her to a press conference. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, I think, and the thing is, like, I was really, people kept bitching about the triangle, and this was well into the drama, like episode 6, 7, or 8. And I'm like, there's no triangle. She's not in love with this other dude at all. She's not interested. She's been a ride or die from Jiho from the very minute we get dropped into the story. And people could not let it go because their expectations were so cemented around the idea that there might actually be some real conflict there, that she might waver. She never wavers, ever. And neither does Jiho in the entire drama. So that's another subversion. Go ahead.
And there is a little bit of conflict between the two men as they kind of work out what's going on here, but you're right, it's not what we typically expect from a triangle.
And I want to call out the scene because it is so funny, and it's a really good example of the humor of this story, is in the stairwell, because they're trying to negotiate. Yes, they're trying to negotiate the day. People are waving their hands because they're trying to negotiate the days of the week. And, you know, Jiho has always had Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Hyejin, being a dick, wants to take those days, and they have to meet in the neutral zone, which is the stairwell of the building, but the lights keep going out because it's motion
activated lights.
So then Sang-un is like jumping up and down, and the guys are waving their arms as they're having this argument, and it's really funny, and it's a really good example of like the humor's off, like either you're into that kind of thing or you're not. And I think Ko Kyung-pyo in particular had some unbelievably funny scenes, like the scene when she tells the boss that she had been pregnant. I was literally screaming through that scene. It was so funny. He's got these expressions on his face reacting to every lie she tells, because the lies keep escalating and he's flipping out, and it's really funny. But going back to the genre subversions, you know, his entire character is the subversion of male leads. And I think that there's a bit of an indictment going on from the writer, where the writer is pointing a finger at us as an audience and saying, you think this other thing, this fantasy is what you aspire for. But actually what really counts is this guy who's just steadily there for her and ride or die for her no matter what.
I can argue about some of the way the final episodes shook out with the writing.
Yes.
However, however, the kind of the last episode, we have some hilarious scenes of Jiho trying on tuxes, and he thinks that she would want a big wedding because, of course, how many big weddings has she had? And then when they finally look at each other and realize, we don't really want a big wedding, we just want to have the people close to us come over for a celebration at our home. And then they just, the happiness, happy relief, like, yeah, that's what we want. I felt like, okay, that is really true to them and to the character. Like, Jiho would do whatever she wanted, but that's not really what he wanted, right? So I still enjoyed seeing him try on several tuxes.
yes. Well, we should talk about the plotting of this, probably. I'm kind of torn. Do we want to talk about the plotting, or do we want to talk about like the trauma aspect of the story?
Well, do you have the Instagram thing about
Yeah, read that out. Sure. It says, so it's a comma from my K-drama binge on Instagram. What I think this drama did right was look at the different ways attachment and lack of attachment can manifest. Sang-un honestly doesn't know how to be attached in a secure manner to another person. The only person she's at all attached to is a gay man, which is significant because it's a safe place away from the expectation of romantic attachment. Jiho, his attachment is unstable. He has one to his family as a child, but it is dependent on him being good and quiet. It's conditional. His response is instead to be a force of stability for himself and others, and that is how he shows affection, by being good, not warm or demonstrative. Now, our second lead, he had unstable attachment with his family too, because he was always trying to protect his mom and her feelings so she wouldn't drink. He was in the parent role instead of the child one right up until the end. So I think that's a great encapsulation of the struggles of the three characters. And I will give the drama credit. Like, there was a lot of things that went off the rails after, I want to say, episode 9.
Yep.
Because things really took a nosedive after episode 9. However, I think everybody did have their journey of healing, you know? And I think we really saw that, like, in episode 13, 14, when Jiho is in the hospital, and then his boss and his coworkers visit him. And RK, I think you in particular called out that scene, that you liked the scene with the boss talking to him, saying, calling him son.
Yeah, I think for someone who was rejected by his birth family, or who lost the important aspect of family as a child, and who learned to protect himself by becoming very shut down, to know that there's someone who cares about him and whose affection for him is really quite fatherly, Jiho was obviously touched. And he's had so few of those touch points in his life that obviously mattered a lot to him. And to me, it was the sort of thing that kind of reduced me to tears, because I was like, yes, oh my God, it's so great. He so needed that, like, even more than maybe having Sangun in his life. He needed someone to make him feel like he was wanted and was part of a family, right? And I thought that was really great. And the boss has always been in his corner, like, even when he thought he was the weirdo who was never going to find a girl, he was in his corner, right? So I also thought it was a nice touch that the boss ended up being the older brother of his therapist.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, they're together, and like the boss, and then she calls the therapist him Opa. And Jiho are drinking together, and she calls him Opa, and he's like, oh, God, these two already know each other. So it was kind of nice that everybody in Jiho's corner was sort of connected. The one person I was not into was his ex-wife. Like, I did not understand her motivations, and I didn't really warm to her as a character at all. For a bit, I thought maybe they would tease this idea of a romance between her and Heijin, but that really didn't go anywhere either, so I don't know. But I did not like her, and I did not like what she brought to the table, so...
It was a poorly written character, and there was a lot of potential for her character, because I actually found it very touching that she and Jiho were these two teenagers who had been cut off from their families, and they clung to each other basically to survive, but they never really connected. Like, they were there for each other by default, and she finally just made a choice that this was not the person for her, and it completely devastated him. And I thought, well, you could do something really interesting with that setup. But unfortunately, you know, she kind of veered from being villainous, but sort of sympathetic, and then never really landed on what she was in the story, which is too bad.
I mean, I would contrast this again. I was watching at the same time, because this is my first life. And the person from the past relationship of the male character comes in and is really an interesting character. And what they do with that character and her relationship with the female lead is really interesting and different. Well, that's not what we got here. But I also wanted to say about the trauma flashbacks for Jiho's character as a child. Oh my God. Like, when we find out how he finds out that his parents are dead, and just how his aunt is just like, you have to just be quiet so his uncle doesn't kick him out of the house. Oh my God. Like, my heart was just breaking for this kid. And you're like,
she literally tells him, don't expect to be loved. I mean, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
And I mean, his journey is, cause like Sang-un says this thing to him that's really beautiful, when she's like, you know, the door is broken, but the room is fine. Like, and you know, that's fundamentally, he's a sound person, but you know, because of these experiences he's had, he just doesn't feel like he has any expectation that anybody will ever care for him. And he's just out in outer space with unlovable and will never be loved. And it's really, another thing I wanted to call out, because this is in the early episodes and I actually really loved it, is they recite a poem with each other where they talk about broken petals smell the sweetest. And she's like, you know, I'm broken grass. If I stay on the road, what will happen to me if I stay on this windy road? You know, it's really like evocative. It was gorgeous. Like, I think, those early episodes, let's talk about this. So like the early episodes, I just thought the writing was amazing. I love the metaphors. I loved what they were doing with the genre subversions. And then we got the first kiss, which I loved. I know Catherine hated the first kiss, but I thought it was awesome. And I know Melanie agrees with me on this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I thought it was great. I thought what I liked about it, I liked the way that they played it, because they're arguing and he's really frustrated and he grabs the steering wheel and shakes it. And it was just like a nice little touch of, you know, he can't really articulate how he's feeling in that moment, but he's just so frustrated. And it was just like a, like, I just thought he played that scene really well. They both did. And so I liked it. But I know Catherine didn't. So I just wanted to make sure that, like, her point of view got. then we get to episode 10 and beyond. And some of the stuff that was a problem in the early episodes became magnified and even more of a problem in later episodes, because Hedgen, while a sympathetic character, is never well integrated into the main story. It feels like his story is kind of an outer space and he's got his own separate drama going, and his separate drama is not really that interesting because it's a typical Chibble succession plot that nobody gives a shit about. And literally, like, nobody cares, and people were fast forwarding through those bits. And, you know, I don't know why they spend so much energy on that part of the plot. Like, people were pointing out there are some episodes in the second half where Hedgen has more screen time than Jiho. Well, why? You know, like, we know that he's never going to be with Sung-eun. And so, like, why are they putting so much, you know, why is he getting so much airspace? So that kind of went wonky.
Part of it for me too was I did like that character, and what I liked about him was that he went into acting to escape his Chaebol succession, and he turned out to be good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like good to the people around him. And when he pulled back and decided, okay, I'm not going to do this, I would have been very angry if that's where it had completely gone, if he hadn't come back and said, no, I need to be doing what I'm good at and what makes me happy. So there was a moment that I was prepared to be very angry with where they were going. But that, you know, it's like, then why did you need all that messy Chaebol stuff?
I get the big scene in the boardroom when he finally
and Sang-eun comes in to save him. I'm like, what? I mean, it was so anticlimactic. It just did not pay
also
off.
And it didn't fit with the vibe of this drama at all.
At all. And it was like Sky Castle or Penthouse, right? And then the other thing is that why was she recording in the bathroom when that guy showed up? Like, she recording the sound of herself peeing or something. Like, what was that about? She just happened to have her phone recorder out and caught the sexual assault, I guess you could call it. I mean, that's a little extreme, but like when he grabs her butt in the bathroom and, you know, harassment, I guess you would call it. And
I mean, I was as dark as they had made those flashback scenes, I was expecting like a full on rape or something. Like, yeah. Literally, it was just not. Okay, not that I wanted her character to be raped. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying they made it so extreme, her reaction when she, you know, came into that dinner party and what she did, that I was like, oh my God, when we finally know what happened. It wasn't crappy,
but it wasn't to the level of what we were expecting. So it was weird. But again, I wonder, like, did somebody intervene? Somebody say, no, you can't do that. Well, because here's the irony. When they started making those changes in the plot that we didn't like, the ratings went up in Korea. They never recovered to the level of the first two episodes, but they did go up. So I think...
One of my comments was that it felt like they were trying to rejig it back to being what you'd expect from a Park Min Young drama.
Yep, you said that and you were right. I agree with that.
And as much as I didn't want that drama, I definitely didn't want it here.
Right, after you get all that like delicious weirdness and darkness and odd humor and everything in the first half, and then it just... You know,
and like the plot points didn't make any sense, right? How does Hye-jin, a guy who has never actually worked for his father's company, walk into that role and just be automatically perfect at it? Like, how? And then what is Jiho, a guy so straight laced and so good at his job, doing, trying to subvert the law so that his girlfriend can get what she wants, like, or to protect her? Like, ridiculous. He would never, you know?
Yes.
And he would have come up with some other creative perfectly legal solution to her problem Correct. Instead of trying to do what he did. So I just don't understand why any of that was necessary. All of those characters could have had the same happy endings they ultimately got without these particular plot subversions. That really, really upset me because up till then it had been a perfectly watchable drama, and the last two episodes were just ridiculous.
No, I did love I did love episode 14 though. That's the one where, to me, okay, so this is a good example where it went sideways, because he quote proposes to her when he asks her to stay the night. It's totally shot like a proposal. He gets on one knee and he takes her hand, and then he talks to her about all their years of dinners and how he felt about it, and how there were so many times when he thought, I should end this now, I shouldn't continue, but he could. He kept saying, one more dinner, one more dinner. And it's just this incredibly romantic moment. And then he gives this heartfelt, please stay with me tonight. And it's their first night they sleep together. We didn't need those two proposals later on after that. That was the proposal. They were already married, right? So that proposal was the declaration of, we are together, we are committed, we love each other, and we're literally consummating the relationship because they spend the night together. And instead, we get a stupid freaking breakup in episode 15, the end of episode 15. Like, what the hell? And Gwangnam actually says in episode 16, what is this shitty breakup? Which made me laugh, because the writer maybe knew how crappy it was. And so it made me wonder, like, well, again, what happened behind the scenes, right? For there to be a meta commentary from Gwangnam on it. Maybe,
well, I wonder if that was the point, though. The writer was saying, see, these kind of breakups are dumb. And she was sort of highlighting how they make no sense and don't belong in the plot, but every drama has one anyway, right? This is the I went away for 3 months, but I sent you postcards moment. Of this drama, right?
Yeah,
so, exactly.
It totally was. It totally was. Actually, and we cannot forget to talk about Gwangnam, because this is a big, important part of this story. So Gwangnam is the best gay character I think I've seen. Well, maybe nevertheless had a lesbian couple that were actually awesome, but I think the male of a male gay character, Gwangnam is the best I've ever seen in a drama. I don't know. You guys may have more experience than I do.
I would say there's a gay character in Sweet Munchies, which is a terrible, terrible drama, but the gay character is written beautifully and sensitively, and has a sad resolution, but a hopeful resolution. I did say to you guys early on that Gwangnam is not getting a relationship. I just knew that that was not going to happen. And I can get why we're all disappointed by that.
Well, they set it up for him to have a relationship. Like, they straight up had the scene where he's at the wedding and he's singing. And right before he starts singing, the manager is at, you know, Hedgen's manager is at the wedding, and there's a girl trying to flirt with him, and he's studiously ignoring her. And his friends are like, ho, 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 when are you settling down? We need to get you a girlfriend. And he's like, I'm too busy, blah, blah, blah. And then Gwangnam starts singing and he gets smitten with him. He's just like staring at him dreamy eyed and like, oh my God, look at this guy. He's amazing, blah, blah, blah. And I was totally like, they're setting it up for him to have a romance with the manager. And then, of course, you know, nothing, it did not happen.
But I mean, I think the writers were winking at, again, were winking at us, because who saves him in that horrible final family, you know, meal that he's having, where, again, Gwangnam's sisters are like, you know, you're shaming our family by not getting, you know, having a real marriage and saying you're gay and blah, blah, blah. And like, and he's about to walk out. And then the manager swoops in and says, I'm his manager. He's going to be a big star. You know, he's such a great singer, and like saves him with the family.
Right.
And then they have this conversation outside. You know, if you left, I would miss you too much. But of course, I don't mean it that way.
Yeah, like, no homo. They actually said like a no homo moment. What the fuck? Excuse me. I'm going to just because.
But I also want to
be so upset.
Devil's advocate a little bit, because how I interpreted that scene where Gwangnam is singing, we know the manager is looking for the next big thing too.
Yeah.
He wants someone else he can manage. So you can look at it from that perspective too. And I think that's how it hit me a little more. And then it just played out that yes, he ends up being his manager. But yeah, that no homo moment was dreadful. That
and
was
it was
just
so
awful.
It was so upsetting because like when the story opens, Gwangnam has hooked up with a guy who
yes.
joins them at the breakfast table, which is an awesome scene. I love the scene because he's sexual and he's very matter of fact about it. Yeah. This I
when
slept
he gives
with this guy
sex,
last night.
When he gives his sex talk to
oh,
someone.
Yeah. The sex talk with Sang-un is amazing. Go ahead, RK.
But notably, the guy who stays for breakfast is foreign. It's okay if they're foreigner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what it is.
That is notable. So, that is notable. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Catherine, how much did you love it that Gwangnam's dream was to go to Canada where he could be free? Like, and march in a pride parade or whatever. Like, those were his dreams. You know, I mean, it just, he ends up staying in Korea, but it's like this compromise that you're kind of feeling like he's not going to maybe be able to be his whole self. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's making a bargain. He would be leaving behind his dear friends and all of that. But I don't know. I mean, they were showing us, like all of us, our hearts sunk when he comes out to his boss at the Taekwondo Academy and then he just reads it and is like, okay, I guess I need to leave then, right? And then, I mean, he's been teaching children, like, but they're playing it that we're totally in Gwangnam's corner and we're totally seeing that this is a tragic thing. So no, none of this is great, but is it baby steps? I don't, you know, in Korea, I mean, at least this feels horrible to say, at least we had a gay character, like that feels horrible to say that, but I was celebrating that. I was celebrating that not only did we have a gay character, but he was one of my favorite characters of this whole drama. And love this actor, want to see more from him. This is the second time as a supporting character that he's hit it out of the park for me. He was so adorable in Homcha. So, you know, it just didn't end the way we wanted it to, but so many of us had such strong feelings about him and his character.
Well, and even when he decides to turn down becoming a singer, the reason is because he's afraid that people will find out he's gay and it will be a disaster. And that is really sad. But we know that that is, you know, a reality.
Right.
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 That's correct. He was such
a that's the reality he chooses when he stays behind and he tells them, okay, I'll let you, you know, I'll become a singer and you can manage me. He's effectively saying, I am trading in my chance to live my truth to instead be successful. So you know, it's really sad. It's a sad commentary on the state of society, but it's also probably more palatable to an audience, especially a Korean audience. So
it's really a shame because he's beautifully written. He's complex. And he's interesting because he's also got trauma, but he's probably the healthiest person in the story. But in a realistic way, like, you know, it's not that he doesn't get hurt when his sister tells him you made my daughter gay, or he doesn't get hurt when he has to quit his job at the Taekwondo studio because he's come out and they don't accept him. These are really awful, painful things, but he just kind of soldiers on, you know, he's got this joie de vivre and a very pragmatic attitude, which is why he and Sang-un, their friendship is really endearing, because they're kind of polar opposites, but it works well. And she does something for him. We discover that when they got married, even though he paid her the fee, she took the fee and bought all the dresses for his family and bought them gifts for the wedding. So she didn't make any money on their wedding. She basically did it at pro bono marriage for Gwangnam. Yeah. So I thought he's just like this beautifully written character, very appealing, very endearing, and who's, you know, gay in a believable way. I don't know how to express that.
Yes.
I don't know if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. And he's made his life healthier by keeping his family at arm's length.
Right.
And towards the end, it's Sang-un who says, when he's still planning to go abroad, she's like, haven't you said goodbye to his family? And then we see what happens when he does that. He has a meal with them, and then it's a disaster, you know, and all they can do is say hurtful things to him.
Right.
So, and he's just, you can just see that he's like, oh, great. The only way that they're going to accept me is that I'm going to be famous. Okay. You know, I mean, just mm-hmm. kind of, it has this realistic attitude about his family. I mean, again, one of the things I love about K-drama is found family. And his found family is Sang-un. They describe each other as brother and sister. And he sort of, after being very wary, has kind of adopted Madame Yuen even before he knows her true relationship.
I love their comedy scenes. They're really funny together. Let's talk about Madame Yu. So I would like Catherine to start because this was your favorite character in the story.
She was. And I think, again, it comes down to some of that, you know, subversion of things, because I kept expecting different things about her. And she's very mysterious early on because she mm-hmm. obviously is used to a very lavish lifestyle that she's living out of a basement apartment or something. It's like she's very strange and secretive. And we don't know at first what her relationship with Sang-un is, although, you know, they peel that back over the course of the whole drama. And you expect her to be, now at one point, Alisa, you were saying you expected her to be, you know, to die by the final episode. And I mm-hmm. absolutely agreed with that, because that seemed to be the arc for that kind of character in a drama. So again, here's another subversion of what we expect.
We had the truck of doom, but then what happened, right?
It was the van of threat. It was not the truck of doom.
But it's also the actor. She was so good at that. She mm-hmm. made me sympathize with her, even as I questioned her behavior. So she was more complex than I would have expected. So I kept going back because I thought, what more are we going to learn about her and how this plays out?
I did not like that they made her bio mom, because I thought the character was way more interesting when we thought of her as a, you know, pseudo maternal figure in Sang-un's life. Because there were people online who were saying, well, why is Sang-un even giving her money? Why is she staying in contact with that bitch? Like, why would she want to? And I'm like, because people who, you know, that's the only mother she's ever known. I mean, that's the answer. Like, so even though she's awful in a lot of ways and did this really terrible harm to her, but who else does she have? Like, literally nobody. And so, yeah, it was totally understandable to me. I agree, though, she was a really interesting leak. And the actress, shout out, she was also the mother in Extraordinary Attorney Woo. And in a poorly written role, but she elevated the poorly written role. And she's just one of those MVP actors, you know, she's going to bring it. And she's gorgeous, so there's that too. I thought it was really interesting to see them wrestling. I kind of wish it hadn't been so caught up in the Chaebol's bullshit stuff, because the emotional way they were trying to reconcile with each other, like the dinner where Jiho sets up them to have dinner together and the way they spoke to each other, I thought that was well done, actually. And that wasn't mm-hmm. one of the later episodes. So, like, it wasn't like the later episodes were completely horrible, all of them, but the quality of the drama.
The folding of the towels scene was actually kind of a lovely scene.
Yeah.
And we do get to understand that on some level, her motivation is to give Sang-un a better life.
Right.
It's not the way she should have gone about it, but you wonder, like, what other choices would she have had?
Well, and I think it was very deliberate, too. The decision to kind of bring her into this upper class lifestyle was because she had been rejected for her lack of family background, right? So she was going to ensure that her daughter would never struggle in that same way. So I thought it was really interesting because all of these people behave in particular ways because they have a very specific trauma, which leads to them sort of inflicting that trauma on other people. So I thought that was really interesting. I do think that if they were going to engage in this whole table line of story at all, that it should have been better woven through the entire drama mm-hmm. instead of mm-hmm. being sort of piled into one end of it where it didn't make much sense and didn't go with the rest of the drama. But it's not uninteresting. I would watch a whole drama that was just about that, about Madame Yu and her her machinations and her attempt to, you know, get back into the good life or whatever. I just think it didn't fit with this particular drama, although I really enjoyed watching the two women reconcile after, yes, you know, this sort of lifetime of bitterness. It was so nice to see them say, well, why didn't you just say that in the first place, you know, and then kind of move on and become a proper or somewhat of a proper mother-daughter type relationship. But okay, that was really nice to see. And that was one of the things I liked in the last couple of episodes. Yeah.
Although it was bizarre that she ended up working in a tea shop. I mean, I'm like, why not like some high-end Chanel boutique or something? That seemed to be more in fitting. I don't know. The other thing that I couldn't tell, and again, I wasn't sure if it was like that I wasn't hearing shades of meaning in the Korean and that it wasn't coming through in the translation. Do you think that she was the head of the in a group? Was she supposed to be his mistress in the past? Was it implied that possibly this was his biological daughter, Sang-eun, that he didn't acknowledge, and that this was all Madame Yu trying to make sure that she was in the place where she should have been? Yeah,
I think that's what it is. The implication I thought was that she had been that man's girlfriend, but then he had chosen not to marry her because she was below his station. And so it left her and Jamie in a bad situation. And that's what she was trying to correct, basically, by having her tied into the Ina group again, in a way, getting her back to her father. And I think at some point she keeps telling him, hey, you need to meet this girl, right? And part of the reason Sang-eun is so upset is because her adopted family has never made any attempt to actually embrace her as their daughter, right?
Right.
So it's almost set up from the beginning, whereas I think at some point Madame Yu had hoped it would turn into a real sort of familial relationship, and it never does.
Right, but they kind of left that on, you know, as unresolved. Like they never went there. You know, it was just always this Chaebol machinations or whatever, and who's got the thumb drive and all of this kind of nonsense. When, you know, I would have appreciated, I don't know, some sort of developing relationship between this person that was her adoptive father. Like, they just left that and they didn't even deal with it. It was just all Chaebol nonsense and
The reason Jamie is groomed to be the Chaebol wife is a business decision. So why would he have any emotions over that?
Yeah.
She was not there to be his daughter in an emotional sense. She was there to be, you know, the key to joining two businesses together.
Right.
And I do think
know from the outset that the girl that Madame Yu adopted is actually his biological daughter?
They never make it clear in the narrative.
Yeah. So we have no idea if he knows or not, right? Like, as far as he's concerned, this was just part of the project. So, okay.
But I mean, he's an asshole, so I was okay with them not meeting. Okay. And I think also, you know, it's just like the whole world is morally bankrupt. Like that whole, it's really clear, you know, that they would take a child and weaponize a child that way. And it's abusive. I mean, I think that was one of the things that fascinated me about the drama. It was like, they made it really clear, crystal clear, that this was abusive to a child. And even to the point that Ji-ho at one point was investigating the adoption, remember?
Yeah.
And was like, this is actually an illegal adoption and we could actually like prosecute over this.
Right.
And that's when he asks Sang-eun, you know, what do you feel about Madame Yu? Like, and that's when she's like, I hate her, but I also don't want anything bad to happen to her, which is very real, right? I mean,
yeah.
How you would feel about somebody like who had done those things. So I do want to touch base briefly before we start wrapping up on Park Min-young's performance in this and what you guys thought. I don't think we really talked specifically about her performance.
I'll start. I found it a little bit all over the place because, you know, in those early episodes, her character is either very shut down or very on. Melanie touched on that earlier. And I get that part of why she turns back into a typical Park Min-young character near the end is some of that is supposed to be recognized as growth. But I sort of felt there were these moments where she was just too perky and bubbly. And it and I didn't feel like I was getting a good grasp on that character. Some of that may be writing, some of that may be direction. But
You know, we had had a talk about a pretty spirited talk about this on the back end, because if you're doing a subversion of rom-coms, casting the queen of rom-coms in your subversion is actually a little way genius, right? I mean, she's representing something that's being deconstructed. However, I didn't think she handled the darker stuff that well. I wouldn't say flat out terrible, but like there's a scene where she's sucking on a lollipop. And I felt like it could have landed better with a different actress who could have brought more nuance to that scene. On the other hand, the scene like when she's some of the scenes with Jiho, I actually thought were really good, where they get a little darker, like when they're like trying to come together, but it's bumpy because they don't really know how to bridge the gap. And I thought she played those scenes well, but there were some other scenes that I felt like it's not quite landing. It's not quite giving me the nuance I need here.
Also the lollipop, I wish they had done more with that. It felt underutilized. Like if it was supposed to be this representation that she's still, as you said, like a teenager inside, and that's how she comforts herself, either go there and use it, but it was like twice or something. That didn't feel as well utilized as I might have liked it. If that's what you're using to represent how immature she is really inside.
Yeah. On the other hand, I don't think you like this, Catherine, but I love the scene where Jiho has his arm in a sling and they're eating together. And she kind of makes a joke alluding to something earlier where he gave her a straw to drink soup because she had her arm in a sling. And then it turns out he's ambidextrous.
Which, I'm fine with that.
Oh, you did?
I didn't love it, but I didn't, you know, they were trying to turn that and be funny. So
that's because the actor is ambidextrous, right?
Kim Pyo, is really ambidextrous in real life, but which was adorable. But the way he played it, like he smirks and he goes, oh, and he picks it up with his left hand. I thought that whole scene was so cute. And
I loved it. It was this whole, aha, look, there's something about me you don't know. And then he switches hands and it's perfect.
By the way,
eating with chopsticks with your non-dominant hand is crazy hard. So good for him.
So I thought those scenes, like, and maybe it's because like they just connected as actors and they were able to play those together. But like, I thought where she faltered more was like in the darker scenes with other people. And that didn't quite land.
I would agree with that. But on the other hand, you know, as you said, you can't. Sorry, brain flurp. Credit to the actress for wanting to try that, even if it didn't land as well.
I totally agree.
And when it went back to being her usual rom-com self, I sort of felt whiplash. It's like, no, this is not working for me.
I agree. I was really disappointed with the second half, except for episode. I actually did like the episodes 13 and 14, but I hated episode 15 so much. And 10 through 12 were pretty mediocre, which was such a letdown because I was so riveted in the first half. And then I just sort of like a lot of that drained away, which is too bad.
You know, we often talk about the fact that sometimes the 12 episode dramas work better because the writing has to be tighter. And I do wonder what this drama would be like at 12 episodes, because we'd have to edit out a lot of that Shea Ball nonsense. I think it would have been a much more interesting drama at 12 episodes.
Agree.
Well, and again, if this was a first-time drama writer, I mean, we've seen only the best of the best can really land it and have consistent pacing and each episode being completely riveting for a full 16 or 20 episode arc. It's really difficult. And especially since they're filming as they're writing the later episodes, so many of these, you know, they start so great, start so strong, And then somewhere in that second half, they can just really go off the rails. And, you know, this wasn't a complete train wreck in the last half, but it wasn't everything that it could have been. And that's kind of what's disappointing, because it was so quirky, weird, unusual, surprising me at the beginning. And then I'm like, And then it was just like doing expected, you know, like mukjung crazy, you know, tropey things. I'm like, no, this is just like, you know, we're putting a square peg in a round hole right now. Like, that's not fitting.
And as much as I keep saying this really wasn't a drama for me, I do recognize that it did some very interesting and very good things. Yeah. You know, there was evidence that this writer really did have some interesting ideas. Even if the execution, for whatever reason, because we do know, you know, if the network isn't happy, there will be rewrites. For whatever reason, there is something there that was interesting and compelling enough to keep even me going.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll be looking forward to more from this writer. At least I definitely will be, because this brought something new to the table, something fresh. And I appreciate that.
The same. And I know that this is not a universally held opinion, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Ko Kyung-pyo's future work. He was nominated for a Blue Dragon Award for his supporting role in Decision to Leave, which is by the same director who directed the film Old Boy. And it's getting quite a lot of attention and acclaim. So I'm looking forward. I'm going to watch that film maybe this weekend, I hope. And
doesn't he have a serial killer drama coming up too?
He does.
Something very dark. Yeah. Here we were joking about him being a serial killer and he's just going for it. Okay.
Yeah, with what's his name? Jung Hae-jin. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the lead. So yeah, so lots to look forward to. I think that's it for today. Just final quick one sentence, would you recommend this drama? I'll start with RK.
To certain people, if I thought they were the kind of people who are into sort of quirky, subversive dramas, I would tell them to watch this. Otherwise, no, I don't think it meets the sort of rom-com criteria for most K-drama watchers.
Yeah, and if you've watched Secretary Kim and other Park Min-young dramas and you love them for that reason, maybe not.
I have nothing to add. I would actually, I do have something to add. I think it's worth seeing for Ko Kyung-pyo's performance, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And he really brings a different energy to the male lead role that you haven't seen before.
I would be a little contrary to what Catherine said, and I would say if you are a Park Min-young fan, if you're her true fan, then you're going to support her trying to stretch and grow and do something different in this drama. And also, I would agree with what RK said. Is this something that I would recommend to a brand new K-drama watcher as an example of K-dramas? No. Right?
Like, yeah.
This is not where you start.
No.
But if you're like us, a couple of years in, and like, okay, I've seen that, and wanting something fresh and different, then yeah, I agree. You recommend it to certain people, but not if someone is fresh and starting out and saying, no, this is not typical, right? Like, I would send someone to Her Private Life. I would send them to Secretary Kim if I was going to give an example of a rom-com or, you know, fake marriage trope and all that kind of stuff. This is not the same thing. But if you've seen all of those and you're ready for something fresh, yeah, this is a quirky, different drama. And, you know, almost every drama, not every drama can be my Mr. Perfect, okay? Like, every drama is going to have flaws. And this was a drama that was so compelling for me that made me want to watch every week. So, you know, even with its flaws, I did really enjoy it. And I'm glad I rode the wave. and I gained new respect for this male lead actor. The guy playing the second lead, I don't think I've seen him. I know he's done other things, but I just have never seen him before. It'll be interesting to see. Here he was playing a very strong second male lead where so many people were upset that he didn't get the girl. So what is he going to be doing next? Is he going to get a lead role of his own coming up. So that would be interesting to see as well.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you, ladies. This was really fun. And thank you, everyone who's listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.